Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
Big news overnight. The Antrim forward Matt Fitzpatrick's proposed 48-week suspension from the GA has been thrown out. We learned about this from Joe Brawley's Twitter account. Joe is on the line. What happened?
Well, I knew the whole thing was embarrassing. It's just it's impossible to identify anyone. And the kid just said initially, look, I don't know who it is. They wouldn't have known who it was, really. And then, I mean, the two boys were jostling. The ref was thrown in a ball. They were jostling. That was really it. And so then what happened was whenever Kieran McGeaney sent the clip in to illustrate that he'd been speaking harmoniously with Joe McQuillan, because Joe had said that he was in fear for his life, the CCCC said, no, well, we can't rely on that because it contradicts the referee's report, and the referee's report as a matter of law is final. All right? But they said, oh, there's an Antrim player who looks as though he's pushing or striking. So they then asked the Antrim board to identify the player. And initially there was some confusion. They thought it was Conor Murray, but it couldn't have been Conor because he'd already been sent off. the Antrim secretary, I mean, you couldn't make this stuff up. He sent them an email saying that he thought it was Matt Fitzpatrick. And I made him come and sit at the conference the other night. He was sitting there across the table from Matt and the senior management team. It's absolutely priceless. Anyway, what happened then was that they then cited him on the basis of the email from the Antrim secretary. They brought him to a hearing of the Central Hearings Committee. The Central Hearings Committee said it wasn't possible to identify anybody from the footage. And but very interestingly, dear, three times during the course of that hearing, they said to Matt, now, are you aware that under Rule 7.3, if you've given misleading evidence to us, you could be liable to a 48-week ban? Okay. So bear that in mind. The day after he was exonerated, can you hear me all right there?
Yeah.
The day after he was exonerated of the striking infraction, the CCCC went and looked at the full footage, which they'd sat on for 3 weeks. They'd had it since the 25th of April, and it hadn't been disclosed or relied upon. And the full footage showed that the player was number 12, because about 30 seconds earlier, you can see his back turned, and you can see the number 12, and if you follow him around. So they then called him back, and they said, look, you told us that it wasn't you, and it clearly is you. 48-week ban. So there was a grave suspicion on my part, and nothing that I saw dissuaded me from that, because you can see people's body language enough that this had been that they had watched the footage, the extended footage, before the meeting about the striking infraction, and that they then asked him, you know. I mean, we put this in the appeal. Now, there were all sorts of appeal grounds. I mean, obviously the DRA is a court of appeal, so there were four or five abuses of power, abuses of process, you know, as a matter of law, which I won't go into. But in truth, the whole thing was embarrassing, and it would have been, and genuinely it would never have happened if it was somebody from Dublin or Kerry. They just thought they would make an example of the Antrim kid. And I mean, it was shameful, really.
Yeah, look, I know there's a game about to go on in the background that you're training the team for, so we can't keep you much longer, but that's kind of the core of the matter here. Is that
the other boy's still having a ride. this is Antrim. They won't be arriving in a coach, you know, wearing headphones. Go ahead.
So that's kind of the core of the matter here is, though, that this hasn't happened in previous instances where there have been high profile incidents involving, for example, the Dublin footballers a couple of years back.
Yeah, well, look, the point about this was an entirely trivial, unremarkable incident. I mean, you couldn't have remembered it. I mean, basically, this is players jostling under a hot ball in front of the ref. And so whenever Matt was asked, is that you? He said, well, I genuinely don't know. And then that was conflated with, you know, well, he's deliberately misled us, which is a very serious offense. You know, here's that. There's a great relief today. But I mean, I would say, I genuinely mean this, I think that the Central Hearings Committee, the people who were involved in this hearing, ought to resign. They ought to step down. I think it was unconscionable what happened.
But they're not doing it.
And apart from anything else, you know, there was a vindictive side to this. This was not justice or anything like it.
But why? It doesn't make any sense that any group would sit down and do that kind of like out of malice aforethought. So they obviously felt like they were doing something. They're volunteers too.
Why would they abandon for 40? Don't forget, these boys are lawyers. Some of them. Why would they abandon for 48 weeks? I mean, it was. You look at the clip and you'll say.
Well, so answer that question.
When I first saw the clip, I thought to myself, no, that mustn't be it. I had to ring the boys and say, look, I think you sent me the wrong clip. Because there's no strike. It looks as though there's a small push at the top of the back.
And so that's he's not banned for that. Like so that's not what the ban is.
That was found not proven because you couldn't identify the player from the 10-second clip that was originally disclosed. But the problem here was that,
Let's come out of that. So what happened was he said he didn't know if it was him or not. Later on, footage emerges that it is him and they ban him for...
He obviously accepted that. But they said he deliberately misled them in essence that he perjured himself.
And so that's what the 48-week ban is for. But why do you think they're going after an Antrim footballer from this game? Like what? So is there pressure from somebody somewhere to suggest that we need to be seen to be doing something?
I think that the personalities got in each other's nerves. At the original, see, I only got a phone call on Tuesday past. Whenever it had already been royally screwed up, so then, see, I swung into action then. But I think there's no doubt that there was real friction between the personalities who had gone down from Antrim and the CHC. You know, because I spoke to some of the people in CCC off the record, and I was surprised at how. Inflamed they were. You know, once I became involved, I rang some of the CC because obviously they're the prosecution service for the GA, so I'm entitled to ring them to find out what's going on. But I felt that they were unusually motivated by this case,
which seems kind of weird and petty when ultimately you're going to ask somebody not to play for a year.
Ban him for a year, Fess. You know, and the other thing about it, you see, was that it was a totally unremarkable incident. I mean, it's the sort of thing that happens 10 times in every game. Referee's going to hop the ball. There's five or six guys around, bunched around, shouldering and all that sort of nonsense. But that was all there was.
Yeah, well, let me just...
there was no reaction. There was no complaint from Armagh, obviously. Armagh player gave as good as he got in the jostling.
Well, we would expect nothing less. But let me just play...
it never got to defending that.
Let me just play devil's advocate for a second.
The player was never given the opportunity to say, look, yes, that is me, but I clearly don't strike him. You can clearly see the push in his back.
Yeah.
Because up until that, the video evidence wasn't sufficient to allow the player to be identified.
Well, can I...
I mean, you're talking... Sorry.
I just want to... Because obviously they're not here to defend themselves, and the personality clash, which you're suggesting seems to have had an impact on what happened.
There was certainly ill feeling. There's no doubt there was ill feeling. This went way beyond what it should have.
Is there a possibility let me make this point. Is there a possibility that when it comes to the meeting out of justice, that this is a committee that has had its fair share of criticism, and that ultimately they've decided that there's going to be a line in the sand this year? They're going to take a hard line with everybody, and so the next case that comes along is also going to be treated in the same way, and that there's a new sheriff in town as far as I know, and so therefore this is the beginning of a process where everybody is going to have this type of draconian punishment.
I really don't know how things got as bad as they did in this case. You know, the CCCC pursued it, you know, with great, they were very, very motivated. I mean, and I think they were extremely upset when the player was exonerated, as he had to be, because the video evidence wasn't sufficient. Don't forget, then, you had also the strife in Antrim with the secretary, given his opinion that it was Matt. Now, it turned out that he was right about that, but earlier, he had opined that it was Conor Murray, and we had the WhatsApp. We'd sent a WhatsApp saying, look, I think it's Conor Murray. So that illustrated in itself how impossible it was to identify anybody.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, look, it was a very tawdry affair, you know, and like it caused the player a lot of angst, genuinely. Like, and there was no call for it whatsoever. I mean, there was no justice in what happened.
Well, let's take the personalities out of it just for 1 minute. What does it suggest about the general sense of justice and the general justice architecture within the GAA at the moment?
Well, it suggested that the CHC didn't give a damn about the player, because the one conclusion that wasn't open to them was that he had deliberately misled them. Because, put simply, during the course of two lengthy hearings, into the original striking infraction. Matt Fitzpatrick sat in front of the committee, the hearing, and they reviewed the footage over and over and over, and they couldn't identify him. So it wasn't open to them to conclude he had deliberately misled them. I mean, that has to be proven.
Yeah.
You know, the much more likely scenario was, because what Matt said himself was, he said, I genuinely didn't think it was me. I couldn't remember the incident. And it looked like one of the Murrays to me. So, how they could go to the nuclear option of deliberately misleading a hearing.
Yeah.
It's a very serious thing.
The poor innocent Murrays kept getting called into this whole thing.
What? The poor innocent Murrays? Well, you know what I mean. I'm not.
The bystanders.
This is a GA. Like, we're not that fragile.
Was there any precedence, Joe, for a 48-week ban for somebody deliberately misleading the committee?
I don't know if there is, but I mean, it's a really, really draconian punishment, and it would have to be something, you know, where there was premeditated perjury. I mean, here it wasn't that at all. It was just that it wasn't possible to identify the player, and as I say to you, he sat in front of them for two lengthy hearings. They reviewed that footage repeatedly, and they could not identify him. And for me, what was highly suspicious was that on three separate occasions at the second hearing, the CCCC asked him, said to him, you know, the implications of you misleading this committee, if that is you and you're telling us that it isn't you. And we discover subsequently that it is, you understand, it's a very serious offence. So, I mean, they go and watch the full footage the next morning and then call him back a week later. And think of the implications of that. He didn't get a fair hearing because that should have been disclosed at the first instance. Then the player would have approached it in an entirely different way. He would have said, yes, that's me, because you can see the number 12, even though it's far away. He would have defended it on the basis that it was a push, not a strike.
Yeah.
And the worst that could have happened was a one-match ban. He didn't get a fair hearing.
Yeah.
And that was the evil that led to all the other evils. And apart from anything else, CCCC have no remit. Their remit relates to things that happened in the course of games and competitions. They had no remit to bring this back to CHC and say, look, he's deliberately misled you. Because their remit extends only to games. Now, that was one of the grounds upon which the thing was struck down. To tell you the truth, the CAC, Jerry, would rarely overturn. Normally, it's a rubber stamping body.
Yeah.
And, you know, you go into any of these lower courts of the GAA, like, I mean, you have to be careful not to be knocked out of the way by the kangaroos. But the DRA, because I had said to the boys, look, we're going to have to go to the DRA here, and I'd set it up for the DRA. But it was so bad that the CAC overturned it. I mean, they quashed it without any remission for any further hearing. Anyway, there it is.
The DRA is pretty expensive to go to, because obviously, you know...
Well, it's €1,000, but it's sort of... I don't know that anybody ever actually has to pay it. You pay it in the first instance, but often you get it... If you win, you get it back.
Right. And everybody always wins, it seems. That's the whole justice system.
And they don't have to pay me. My set fee for DRA cases is a pint of Guinness. You should have seen the Anthem boys. I'll tell you good, and this is good. Frankie Fitzsimmons and all those boys in the Anthem management, all they're sitting there, you know. And I had arrived in, you know, and I was quoting a bit of Latin for the crack, you see. Latin maxims, you know, nivo iurex, you know. Causes, all this stuff, you see. You see the boys. I was just putting on a bit of a show in front of them, you see. And then they said, look, what about money or so? And I said, look, boys, I'm not going to lie to you. My fee is a pint of Guinness, you see. So they brought over the pint of Guinness, and I drank the pint of Guinness. And I could overhear that Simon saying, Jesus, thank fuck for that. Because I had just come from work, you know. I was wearing the full suit and all, you know, coming in there like Mr. Burns' lawyers. Anyway, all right, here, I better.
We'll let you go, Monty. Thanks a million. Joe Brawley there, giving us some detail on what happened. I thought he was going to say 10 grand, but there you go.
Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
GAA and Newstalk is with thanks to Borgosh Energy, giving customers exclusive access to the GAA Hurling All-Ireland Senior Championship at bgerewards.ie. Brendan Devaney and Billy Joe Padden are on the line. Lads, championship is here. How you doing?
Good.
Very good.
Brendan, I'm going to start with you. At the start of the league campaign, we had Michael Murphy, and even before that, when he was doing his toughest, and he was like, look, it's a transition period. And then the kids come along and it turns out they're really good. So expectations have mushroomed pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's an exciting time. Yeah, I guess one of the most exciting times you can ever remember being a Donegal fan coming into the championship. Although, you know, the championship fair, what they might see is certainly going down, maybe an excitement from a Donegal point of view. They're such a young team that's fresh, that, as you say, we're supposed to be in transition, but these guys have been coming through successful minor and under 21 teams and have come in ready. And, you know, physically, maybe not what they'll be in a few years' time, but I think playing in a system where you don't tend to get isolated one-on-one, they're able to cope with it. And there could be as many as 5 debutants in the Donegal team to face Antrim on Sunday. And that, you know, normally there'll be a question mark over that in terms of, you know, settling in or how will they cope with it. But they've already shown in the league that they're more than capable, and I think anything's possible for the Donegal team.
Yeah, because there were definite periods in the league where it looked like there were even periods within matches where they were ultra defensive, but there were also some attacking flourishes, which is what you would really expect from this manager given the length of time he's known the panel and now the length of time that he's had full control.
Yeah, the evolution of the team has been massive so quick. I think the first game against Kerry, 10 points down, and you know, looking like this is going to be a serious, tough league for Donegal that could get relegated. Ever since then, you know, they've turned it around. I think Dublin's offensive game is probably Dublin. And sure, you know, Dublin coming in with all they had, the Donegal team was just beginning to bed in. And once they realised they could match up to Dublin in the second half, they took the game to Dublin and the home crowd got behind them. And ever since then, you know, there's been some unreal passages of play, really completely controlled the game against Tyrone at home, you know, completely controlled the games of Monaghan, should have Monaghan well beat by the time they get that late penalty. And really, you know, in the last game against Mayo, you know, Mayo were fighting for their lives, and, you know, you probably come on to the big man O'Shea, he's been in the headlines again as usual, but he came on, and really the power of Mayo, you know, I think it was a very important learning game for Donegal, because they can't take on a team like Mayo on a power game like that. They need to figure out how they cope when the pressure comes on them, and that, and they had played brilliant football in the first half, and Mayo just took them apart in the second half. So I think it was a big it was a brilliant league for Donegal to learn, and when these lads matched up against the best players in the country, they see that they're able for it. So I think what you have now, Donegal was a bit laboured last year, but they have now his energy and runners coming from every direction, and they have a bit of flair back about them again. And I know Ulster teams get criticised for being negative. It was a horrible Ulster final. We apologise for what you've seen last year, particularly since we lost it. But I think what you have with Donegal now, Rory's smart enough to know he needs that bit of flair to come out and beat teams. And it's no good, as we've seen with Dublin last year, being 3-4 points down towards the end of the match and sitting and defending. You know, there's no point to it. You have to have that attacking style, and I think that's what Donegal have.
Yeah, you've got to also pin it on the fact that this is not the first year of the manager, but he has proven in the past to be quite a deep thinker when it comes to trying to make teams have that attacking flair. What about Mayo, Billy Joe? No Aidan O'Shea was referenced there by Brendan and the team for the game against Sligo. Like, I don't know what the story is. Earlier on, Nathan was speculating that maybe he just hasn't quite fully recovered from the injury that he suffered playing basketball months and months ago at this point.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I saw one paper describe it as sensational that he was left out, and I'm not sure if I'd go that far. I think Mayo are actually struggling to figure out how is the best way to utilise him, and I have no doubt that what you saw in the last two rounds of the league, if you had the luxury of being able to bring Aidan O'Shea on for the second half or the last 25 minutes of games, there is no doubt in my mind he would have a huge influence on the game, maybe even more of an impact than he would start in the game. You know, he's coming on to tired bodies, he's so physically dominating that he inevitably has an impact. He draws defenders to him, creates havoc all round, and other teams try to get physical with him, and that was very much the case in the last round of the league against Donegal, and even away up in Omagh against Tyrone. But at the same time, he's going to be, I suppose, disappointed. He'll want to start. So it might be no harm. It's a Sligo game. It might rev him up a bit more in terms of his preparation for if should they get over that for the later rounds in the championship. And there is a perception, Mayo, I don't subscribe to it, that, you know, sometimes the Mayo players have maybe had too much power, got too big for their boots. And some people will see this as Aidan being knocked back a peg. And it's up to him. I don't believe that's necessary or that's the case, but it is up to him to go out there and prove that he's, you know, the leader of this team and get himself back in a position where he's leading from the front from the start. And you can only do that by putting in serious performances.
Yeah, they've kind of had a weird enough championship last year, when you consider how they ended up coming through the back door and not looking in any way convincing through the back door, pretty much up until the final against Dublin, really, where you're like, actually, this is the Mayo team that we've come to know and love and really respect. And so everybody assumes that it's going to be the same team this year in the championship that finished last year's, but maybe it is going to take them a little while to find out exactly who is fully fit, what exactly the style of play will be, if the two O'Connors can be the driving force in the forwards to get them to another All Ireland final again.
You're exactly right, and I'm on line with that. I don't know what the identity of this Mayo team is under Stephen Rochford. And I thought, like you just said, coming out of the All Ireland finals last year, all right, ultimate disappointment. But you're there. You saw a template. You saw this is what this Mayo team is going to go and do going forward. They're going to be very defensively sound. They're going to be ultra aggressive. And then you came into a league campaign where they did none of that in the first five rounds of the league, apart from the second half against Kerry, where they really got stuck into Kerry. And that was probably more to do with the circumstances of the game, where it got a bit tetchy and Mayo reacted. Now, the last two league games were different, away in Tyrone and away and at home to Donegal, where they're playing, you know, ultra defensive teams, and they kind of matched that. Got loads of halfbacks out on the field. That's the strength of the Mayo team. We're defensively sound to try to break out of there. And then, I suppose, then you kind of look at the Mayo team that's picked the next day and you kind of say, well, how does that fit in with what worked well in the league in those last two games? And I think the critical point of that is Kevin McLaughlin. He was a sweeper last year. It worked well. All right, there were some teething problems at the start. He didn't operate as a sweeper at all in the league campaign. And it looks like a very orthodox forward line if he plays as a forward next Sunday. But I think it would be to Mayo's benefit, and I think it would be to the better of the team for the long run if he reverted back to his sweeper role and they developed that again. And because that's, to me, that's the only way they can win big games at Croke Park, is playing that way.
Yeah. And what do you think will happen?
I'm surprised that we didn't see an extra defender, because there was, in those two games that I've mentioned already in the league, you had Shane Nally playing as a wing forward and dropping back in there. He's naturally a wing back. So you're effectively playing with four or five fellas across the half back line. So I expect Kevin McLaughlin, even though I haven't heard anything out of the camp, it's been a very quiet camp, I expect Kevin McLaughlin to go back there and play in a deep midfield sort of half back line place. He mightn't be the only sweeper there, because you're going to have Colin Boyle, who's going to be operating at that kind of number six or in the half back line. He's not going to do too much attacking. So I think that that's what they're going to do. Play four or five bodies across there. Shamie O'Shea is back in. He's a good defensive minded midfielder, as is Tom Parsons. And I think they're going to try and create that platform there and build on some of those things that worked for them in the drawn games or in the games against Dublin last year in the All Ireland final.
And do you need to see that against Sligo this week to know that it's going to work in Croke Park in August, or do you wait until Croke Park in August and kind of try and rope it up everybody?
No, I think that the other contenders, the Donegals, the Dublins, Kerry, they know that that's what Mayo will have to do to beat them, so they'll prepare for that anyway. I think Mayo would be better served. I said this at the start of the league. I thought Mayo would be better served operating on that policy from day one in the league. So I think they should go and do that now and develop these relationships and, you know, get used to the game plan. It's very much like what Brendan said there about these Donegal young players. They're playing in the exact same system from under 16, under minor and under 21. They're used to it. They know exactly what their role is. The Mayo players need to get that familiarity in terms of the game plan. So they should implement it now, in my opinion.
Did you see anything else over the league campaign to suggest that this is a team developing and progressing?
No, I think that lots of Mayo supporters, I'm sure the management were quite frustrated in terms of many of the things that they hoped would happen didn't. So, you know, I hope they'd build on that defensive game plan. You hope to see a couple of forwards, particularly inside, whether it be Conor Loftus or step up and put their hand up. They didn't. Like, young Boland is a real bonus, but he's, I suppose, a wing forward. He's a ball player. Once he gets bigger and stronger, he's going to be a very effective player, because he's such a wonderful footballer, great kick passer, can take a score when it happens. But it's going to take him time to get used to the physicality, particularly of championship football. So he was the main positive in the league, whereas lots of Mayo supporters would have been hoping there would have been a few more.
Yeah, I'm sure. Brendan, what did you make of this Mayo team over the course of the league, and what do you think is their ultimate point in the championship this year? Do they end up getting beaten in a semi-final? Do they make a final? Can they go and actually win an All-Ireland this year?
I think I'm lost, as Billy J would know the man said right there. What are we going to expect from Mayo? You just do not know. And even that game with Donegal summed it up. First half, they were shocking. Donegal just were at their cush cruising in the game, and then as I say, the man himself, people, there seems to be a lot of hate, but I think people are such a fascinating with O'Shea. Anything that happens around him, you know, he scored a half a goal against Sligo a couple of years ago. Mayo do not need O'Shea doing that in the Connacht Championship. And I think what Roger's doing is 100% right. I mean, if you want O'Shea coming in those big games to be fresh and chomping at the bit, not destroying a Sligo team now. You know, he's many, many championships under the belt now. Hold him back and keep him and have him as fresh as you can. That's what I would do if I was the manager. And it's interesting to hear people saying that it's almost knocking him back a bit. I think a lot of people have it in for O'Shea a lot because he is this massive character and player in the game and all. But, you know, from what I've seen of the likes of Cavan going down there, I mean, Donegal played Cavan the week previous, destroyed Cavan and Breffni. Then I'm watching them have them in the accumulator, of course, and Cavan beat Mayo, you know, in a game which really put Mayo under savage pressure in their home patch. And I'm thinking to myself, right, that's this Mayo team gone. And then, as I say, that second half against Donegal, I'm like, hold on a second. So, you know, Billy Joe's right. The sweeper McGoughan, I can't understand why they're not playing the same system. It just bemuses me. But they still have this power. They have this presence with them. That anything's possible with them. And I suppose it's great to see Jack Cavagay back. I think it would have been a bit bittersweet. You know, a servant like him, if Mayo had got across the line last year, and it's great to see him back in the fold again. And it's up to players like him and Bowen, these guys coming in, Conor O'Shea. You know, they have to provide this energy again. They will have to summon up this energy to see if they can go all out again and try and win this title.
The point you make about O'Shea being fit and fresh and chomping at the bit later in the summer, you don't think it obviously applies to Michael Murphy. You know, he's going to play every minute of the entire Ulster Championship campaign, and an Ulster title might seem like a big step forward for this group, given, you know, the fact that they might have been in transition this year. But actually, why shouldn't they just go through the back door, wait and be good in August?
Yeah, you know, Donegal, Mayo.
Donegal.
Yeah, go through the back door. No, I think Rory is. I don't think there's one manager in the country who wants a provincial title as much as Rory. I think this is massive, massive for him, and he's gearing up. And I know everybody says it, particularly here in Ulster. Listen, we won Ulster first, and they take it from there. He is desperate to get back into that final and put up for, you know, the last couple of seasons what's happened. I think, you know, Donegal have gone in all out for that Ulster title. They don't want to see no back door. I think Donegal will win Ulster. I think that's their main aim. And I think because of what you mentioned earlier, that bit of dynamism they have, that I think they have more over Tyrone. Tyrone seems to have serious issue getting scores at the minute. So should they beat Derry and we beat Antrim on Sunday, and then you're looking at, you know, possibly you'd think Monaghan will come through the other side. And Monaghan always make a tough fight of it against Donegal. But again, from what we've seen in the league, I think both teams, the three big teams in Ulster, I think that there's a bit of fear from Monaghan and from Tyrone from the pace that Donegal have breaking forward.
Yeah, Heung-min Son has just scored after the earlier goal from Harry Kane. 2-0 Spurs lead at Leicester tonight with 35 minutes gone in that game. The trip through the back door, as difficult and all as it might have been for Mayo last year, Billy Joe, kind of also must give Mayo fans a sense that the be-all and end-all is not winning another Connacht title for this group. Most of them have 5 Connacht medals, so no big deal if they do actually crash out at some point along the way here.
I think that last year it worked out really well for them in terms of it got players sufficient game time under their belt, and they gradually built it up, and you know, they kind of came under the radar and played Tyrone in a quarter final, and you know, they reacted after that and went on. I do think though the circumstances have kind of changed in Connacht a bit, and that Galway are coming strong, and you know, you can't but be impressed with what they've done. They're going to be a Division 1 side next year. If Mayo are to win a Connacht title, they're going to have to beat Sligo and go down to Galway and beat them, and I think that would be the perfect preparation for this Mayo team and be a huge confidence builder for them if they could win these next two rounds in the championship, but particularly in Galway, beating Galway in Galway. And the profile that the Galway team has there, you know, there's some good young players, there's a lot of pace, and I think it'll do a lot for this Mayo team, you know, particularly some of the fellas that are so experienced and people are wondering, you know, when is the end of the road going to come for them? That if they can go down there and put in a big performance to win, I think that'll put them in a better situation going into Croke Park than taking another defeat in Connacht and trying to mentally react to that. So I think the Connacht Championship is hugely important to Mayo, and not in terms of being able to keep the thing on the right track in terms of your mental preparation and not getting too downbeat following a defeat.
Yeah, I suppose the other thing is that it means that there's no room for the supporters to have any issues or problems. There's no more tricky questions asked about team unity and all that kind of stuff, which unfortunately just seems to have been an issue over the last while.
Yeah, and that has been a problem. I suppose any time you come away from the nuclear option of changing the management a couple of years ago, and then you add it to the fact that, like, there are a lot of supporters out there that really are really behind the Mayo team, but at the same time they're curious, they're wondering, you know, how can they keep coming back from these defeats? And that question is always there, and that creates an atmosphere sometimes around the team. And even though the Mayo support was absolutely phenomenal again in the league campaign, I think there was like 14,000 of that Mayo Donegal game, which really was a game that, you know, Mayo supporters could have seen their team relegated and probably been the end of the road for this great Mayo team. Well, then the atmosphere, it seeps through to the players, and that's why it's up to it's only the players that can change that. And that's why I think the kind of championship is vitally important to kind of change the atmosphere, change the mood around the camp again, so that the Mayo can go into August, you know, having three or four good games under their belt. And if they are going to win a Connacht championship, they're going to have to play well, and that'll be good, because it'll mean that some of the older players are getting back into form at the right time. And who knows, Fergal Boland could, you know, be the man that stands up and makes a huge difference for Mayo in the championship. We don't know, but maybe the Connacht championship will tell us that.
Yeah, Brendan, I know you've to go in a minute, but I just wanted to get your thoughts on Monaghan, obviously up against Fermanagh on Saturday evening. That's it's going to be a decent enough game, and these are the type of games that, you know, Monaghan up against the better teams, you give them every chance of winning. Sometimes they end up getting caught by teams who on paper look like they're not their match.
Yeah, and I suppose if there's one team to do that in Ulster, it would always been Fermanagh. You know, Pete McGrath is an excellent manager. You know, he demands the best, and he's trying to work, obviously, you know, with a smaller pool of players than most of the other counties have to work with. And, you know, he's certainly tried to get the best out of them. They've obviously had a bad finish to the season with relegation in the league and that, and very, very tight Division 2. And, you know, I'm sure they would have loved to hung in there. You know, that's probably just, if they stay in round Division 2, you know, it's a massive stuff for them. So back down in Division 3. But I think what I've seen of this season of Monaghan, you know, some fantastic performances throughout that league, and brilliant performance obviously doing beating Kerry. And, you know, this guy McCarron is just, you know, he's unbelievable. Like, he's as good as forward as is in the country. And with him and McManus inside, you got to think that they're going to outscore the great guy Quigley and at the other end of the pitch. You know, they've won brilliant score from free taker, and certainly Monaghan with the two of them. I think McCarron's a massive plus, because there's so much weight on McManus's shoulders this last few years, and he carried that admirably. But I think McCarron now has really stepped up the plate, and I think the two of them, you know, in a shootout of too much for Fermanagh.
Yeah, and you obviously expect Donegal to be relatively straightforward in victory against Antrim.
Yeah, I suppose Antrim, you know, it's what, 2009 since they came down and shot Donegal in that game in Balbuffet. It was a massive day for them. But, you know, Baker had come in at that time, and Baker Bradley really galvanised, and Antrim was getting the best from him. And ever since then, you know, Antrim always seems to be, there's always problems and disarray, and players, no, not playing or not the full complement of squad guys that could be in. So, you know, Antrim obviously Division 4 and playing against, you know, one of the best teams in Ireland, Donegal at home. And as we're saying, Jerry, you know, that because teams are playing this system now, it's so hard for the smaller teams to catch them on an off day, because they don't play at such a low level, because everybody just plays the system and the better players come through. And there's no doubting that Donegal are miles ahead of Antrim at the minute. But, you know, Donegal gives them the respect. You know, they're coming down for first round of championship, but I think it'll only be a question of, you know, the points difference. I don't think that, you know, it'll be a very competitive game for Donegal, but, you know, there's nothing they can do about that. And there's a massive one on the horizon if Tyrone get over Derry.
Yeah, good stuff, Brendan. Thanks a million. We'll talk to you again later in the summer. Sure. It's Brendan Devaney's thoughts there. What do you actually expect, Billy Joe, from Mayo this year? Is it, like, is it straightforward? It's an All-Ireland semi-final against Kerry, pretty much?
Yeah, I think my focus has really been on just the Connacht Championship. And I think that you mentioned early on about all these Connacht medals that some of these players have. And I think first they have to reassert themselves in the promise, in the province. And, you know, that starts with the Connacht Championship. And like I said, I think they need to install that game plan that seemed to be something they were building on last year throughout this Connacht Championship. And even if it means that you don't beat Sligo in a sort of an impressive free-scoring way like you did a couple of years ago, well, it might serve you better in the later rounds of the championship. And I think that's the only way that Mayo can build for later. And so on. But I suppose the one thing I want to say is that the one thing we learned about this Mayo team over the league campaign is that when they haven't been physically added, and Brendan talked about energy, when they haven't been added, they have been terrible. They were terrible against Dublin, got absolutely hammered up there in Croke Park. And the only decent performances they put in the league were the second half against Kerry, where they really physically, manned up in Tyrone and Donegal, and at home to Donegal. And it might be hard for them to get up for a Sligo game like that, but they absolutely have to, because it's the only way they will have success.
Yeah, that Kerry game, like, Kerry had a lot of injuries. Their best forwards either didn't start the game at the last minute or were taken off with injuries after 15, 20 minutes. One of their best defenders was taken off. They had a bunch of under-21s on the field in that second half. So I'd be a little bit worried, given that we haven't really seen the iteration of that identity that you talked about from a Mayo perspective.
Yeah, and that's totally understandable. And you're exactly right. And Kerry could have had that game, just tied up early on, because they missed a lot of chances. Mayo were all over the place. And yeah, even in that last 5 minute period in that game, Mayo had many more experienced players than Kerry had in that situation. And they would have been awful disappointed if they didn't see out that game the way they did. So they really still are searching for their identity. I think the pressure will come on the management if that doesn't become apparent pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Because you're into your second year, the players well, you've seen a lot of these players play high level games. You've learned an awful lot about these players over the years in terms of the big games you've seen them play. And it's about identifying the right game plan for them and installing it and getting them working towards it and being successful. And that's something that hasn't happened yet, but I suppose we're hoping that it does in the county championship.
All right, good stuff, Billy Joe. Thanks a million.
No problem, Ger.
Billy Joe Paddon giving us his thoughts ahead of the first weekend proper of the football championship. Sligo supporter Marianne rang in, yawn, 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 have Mayo already got the game won? No, they don't. We were talking more general terms about the All-Ireland contenders who are in action this weekend. We will, of course, get the opportunity to talk about the other teams who are playing this weekend in more detail on Saturday and Sunday here on Off the Ball. GAA News Talk is brought to you by Bord Gáis Energy, official electricity partner to the GAA. Follow hashtag Hurling to the Core for all the Senior Hurling Championship action.
Off the Ball on News Talk. Thanks to Ayr. Catch all the sports you love free on the Ayr Sport Pack with Ayr Broadband.